It's All About Food with Karen Hartglass, Wednesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. Thank you for joining me. I am actually in San Francisco for the week, and what is it about March? It goes in like a lion, and it's very lion-like all month long. I don't know whoever mentioned the lamb, but it's been cloudy and rainy here. I understand it was snowing in New York. And I'm actually seeing just a little speck of sun right now. I'm enjoying that. Crazy. So on this show, for the last, for the last few segments, I've been talking about some very serious issues. We had Dave Kirby on last week and talked about his book, Animal Factory, which talked about so many terrible things about factory farming of animals, and his focus was on how it affected people. We didn't even get into what goes on with the animals that are exploited in order to make food for people. It's an industry that affects all life on Earth, and it's something that definitely has to change. It's not sustainable, it's cruel, and the, quote, food that's produced certainly isn't healthy for us. And before that, there were just a lot of serious shows because there's a lot of serious issues to talk about when it comes to food. And when we bite into those burgers, or bite into anything, any meal that we sit down to, I think it's a really good exercise to think about, where did this food come from and how many people were involved in getting it to my plate? And when you really connect the dots and go backwards, it's amazing how many people were involved, how much energy, where that food has traveled before it got to your plate. We live in a really complicated world. But when it all comes down to it, I think the solution, making things simpler, making things healthy, making things more environmentally sustainable, all the good things that we can do actually turn out to be, food-wise, the most delicious, the most satisfying. And so that's what I'm going to talk about today, all the wonderful, yummy things about a plant-based diet, all the reasons to do all the right good things. And we're going to be talking to somebody who's really made it so much easier and simpler and joyful and delicious. We're going to be talking with Isa Chandra Moskowitz, who is the award-winning vegan chef and author of several best-selling cookbooks, including Veganomicon, Vegan with a Vengeance, Vegan Cupcakes Take Over the World, Vegan Brunch, and Vegan Cookies Invade Your Cookie Jar. She's a Brooklyn native who began her vegan cooking journey more than 20 years ago. She's inspired by New York City's diverse cuisine and has been featured in many print and online publications, including Saveur, The New York Times, The Washington Post, Veg News, Herbivore, Bust, and more, as well as on NPR and Portland's AM Northwest. You can find her cooking and writing at the Post Punk Kitchen, theppk.com. Welcome, Isa.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Did I pronounce your name correctly?
You did.
Because, you know, I've only seen it in print many times and never had the opportunity to say it.
It's Lisa with no L.
Oh, I like it. Like Liza with a Z, Lisa with no L. We should write a song about that. Well, welcome. You really are a superstar in my world.
Thanks.
And so I'm looking at this beautiful, beautiful book, your new cookbook, Appetite for Reduction. I love the front cover. Who did that art? Who did that great artwork?
That was,
it's really gorgeous.
It's a friend of mine and also one of the best tattoo artists in the country named Seth Wood, and he works at Save Tattoo in Brooklyn. So, yeah, he's an actual tattoo artist. That's why the cover looks so great.
Right. You know, I didn't realize that, but now that you say tattoo, actually, I guess I can see the connection. But it's because all of the items are outlined, so they all pop out. They're all distinct. And
right,
that might
yeah,
come
it was supposed
from...
to be like tattoo flash art.
Right, yeah, really gorgeous. Okay, and everything inside is gorgeous.
Yeah. Thanks.
Okay, let's just get to know you a little bit better. When you were young, what did you want to be when you grew up?
Well, I went through a couple of different phases, but I always, I mean, when I was, you know, just a kid, I wanted to be an artist.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, you certainly are an artist.
Sort of.
Well,
kind of
you know,
cool.
I definitely think that that preparing food is an art, and it should be considered an art, and I think more people should approach it like an art. There are some people that are so lost in the kitchen, they have no idea what to do, and then others find it so simple,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's partly because it is an art, and some people are drawn to it, and other people aren't. And it's in some ways, it's a lost art.
Yeah, I think so. It's hard to tell because being in the vegan community, people really like cooking,
mm-hmm.
and there's so much centered around food and cooking, so it's kind of, you know, I know the statistics say that people are cooking, you know, less than our parents did, less than their grandparents did, but it really seems like it's on the upswing just from where I'm standing that people are cooking more, but I don't know, you know, but the numbers don't tell that story.
You just said something, and I never thought of it this way, and it's kind of chewing up all kinds of thoughts, and that is that vegans like cooking. And I'm not sure that's entirely true. I think those that have been successful with being a vegan like to cook because it's really an important part of it. And maybe those that don't quite make it are those that don't do so well in the kitchen. I'm not sure. I'm going to have to chew on this one.
It could
for
be.
A while.
I guess from where I've always been involved in the vegan community that does like cooking. So
yeah.
Occasionally I get that person that's just, you know, living on frozen veggie burgers and stuff like that. But, you know, and of course in New York City it's really easy to just eat out 3 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part I'm surrounded by people who love cooking.
Well, I think what you're doing, if we go through the history of the vegetarian movement, the recent one, because vegetarianism has been around ever since this country was created as the United States.
And even before that.
And even before that, people have been eating plant foods on this planet and in this area forever. but in the most recent history that we're familiar with, the vegetarian food originally, maybe in the 60s when the hippies came around, it was considered brown rice and steamed vegetables, and most people considered that boring. By the way, brown rice and steamed vegetables can be fabulous.
Oh, I love it, especially if you have a
great dressing. I want to knock brown rice and steamed vegetables. But it was considered like that was it. And over time, we've really grown in terms of the culinary experience of plant foods, and you've definitely been an important part of it. And I think you've had an arc, too. I mean, some of your early cookbooks were all about the treats, the cupcakes and the cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was important for a lot of us to know that we could have our cake and eat it, too, in a way.
Yeah, I think recently just veganism has been getting taken seriously in the culinary world. And you have lots of famous chefs doing vegan menus, and you have even things like Good Housekeeping coming out with a vegan cookbook. And, yeah, so now it's looked at as this culinary adventure and taken seriously and not just looked at as, oh, an oat burger or something like that.
Mm-hmm. And I'm kicking myself, but one famous chef recently, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he said that vegetables were the next thing.
Yeah, that seems to be a common thread lately. I think there was some magazine named Veganism as, I don't know, like Restaurateur magazine, as Veganism as the next culinary,
mm-hmm.
you know, the big culinary trend this year is vegan dishes. So,
well, that's really exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It really is. And so you're a part of being the foundation of that whole culinary explosion.
Well, I'm glad you think so.
I definitely think so. And so this most recent book is interesting because it's about healthy food, food without a lot of calories, food mm-hmm. with a lot of that's easy and good for us.
Yeah, I just wanted to do a good weeknight cookbook that had lots of healthy whole foods-based recipes and tried to do each recipe as a little mini cooking class. So hopefully mm-hmm. you can gain something from every single recipe. And just how to coax flavor out of vegetables and plant-based foods without adding a ton of oil, you know, and a ton of fatty foods.
Yeah, this is really what America needs, the weekday cookbook, how to put a meal together fast for a family. So
yeah,
it's definitely fills a big gap.
Yeah, it's not supposed to be, you know, super fancy restaurant food, just
right.
great casual. If it doesn't take 30 minutes, then then the recipe will have a lot of downtime. So if something's roasting away in the oven, you can do whatever you need to do. You know, maybe the recipe takes an hour, but all of that isn't going to be hands-on time.
I think a lot of these recipes are a variation on a theme, and perhaps when some people go through some of these, they will feel empowered to kind of go off on their own at some point.
Yeah, hopefully.
But there's a lot of basic staples that make it easy to make all of these recipes, just things that you always have, so when you're inspired, you grab this and that and whatever. So
right. Yeah,
what does your kitchen look like?
Well, for the book, I tried to make a lot of pantry staples. So, and everything is supposed to be supermarket friendly. So as long as you have these staples around and you're getting, you know, your fresh produce every week, you should be able to make them any night of the week without having to make a special trip. So lots of grains, you know, quinoa, some barley, brown rice, and lots of different kinds of beans. I think I've used every single bean under the sun. And lots of different, I think, sauces and dressings kind of make the meal. So even if it is a night of brown rice and steamed vegetables, you can also have some baked tofu with it and a really awesome dressing with it. So you can have, like, the green goddess dressing or a barbecue dressing or, you know, a mole sauce. So there's a lot of variation, even though there is common themes throughout.
Mm-hmm.
Like, as far as your palate goes, there's going to be, you know, a different taste for every night of the week.
Yeah, sometimes you're in the mood for, especially in the United States and in major cities where we have access to so much, we're really so fortunate. And so I think it may not apply to all of America, but I think our palate has expanded ethnically. And so one night you can have Mexican, one night you can have an Asian flavor, one night you can have an Italian flavor, and it all applies really nicely to vegan food. And you see that all those different flavors in your book.
Yeah, I think all of my food really comes from my experience growing up in Brooklyn and having a lot of diversity in my life and a lot of different kinds of cuisines and a lot of friends from different cultures, you know, so I always got to try really great authentic food, so it didn't have to be, you know, matzo ball soup every night just because my last name is Moskowitz, although I could live on matzo ball soup every night. But, you know, just eating at my friends' houses every night, and that's just how it was in Brooklyn. You know, we're always out and doing stuff and then going to somebody's house for dinner pretty much. So, yeah, I got to go on a lot of little culinary adventures as a teenager and as a kid. So
We'll get back to that matzo ball theme in a little while, because I have some questions about that. But the thing that interests me whenever I look at a new cookbook, because I do a lot of cooking, is what am I going to learn from this? And I'm always tickled when I actually do discover something. So one of the things that you talk about is how to manage ginger, and I really like the tip that you gave in with preparing it and freezing it so it's ready to go.
Right, yeah. So I think I've seen people struggle with ginger so much, just trying to get around all those nooks and crevices, and it's
mm-hmm.
just And there's like all sorts of gadgets to do things, you know, like that. But really, the only utensils we really, really need in the kitchen are things like forks and knives and spoons. So for the ginger, you just scrape the skin right off of the spoon, and it goes effortlessly around all the crevices and gets all of and all the nubs and gets all the skin off, and then I just pop it in the freezer. And there's my fresh ginger whenever
right.
I need it.
Oh, it's brilliant. I do use a lot of ginger, and I love it fresh. And it's just one of those, yeah, let's just deal with the ginger. And
yeah.
I encourage everyone to plan ahead, think ahead, and it makes things go, it just makes life so much easier. And you can even thank yourself for taking care of yourself where you prep things, and then you just have them. And so you reach
right.
into the refrigerator, something's ready to go, and you can say, oh, thank you,
yeah,
Karen, for
it
making
always,
that for me.
It makes me feel good just to have, like, a thing of cooked quinoa and some cooked beans already, and just a number of dressings in the fridge. Even if you just spend an hour on Sunday preparing some of these things, you can have food for the whole week, and it doesn't, you know, and a pretty diverse range of food. It doesn't
yeah.
take that much effort.
So I think a lot of success in life has to do, I mean, there are people that are not very organized and do well, but I think life is a lot easier when there's planning and organization, and it's definitely true in the kitchen.
Although I will say that that is the only place where I'm organized. You don't
okay,
want to
well,
my
that's probably the best place to be organized.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, the kitchen... It to me is like a, it's just a very sacred place.
Yeah, I think the easier it is to cook, the more you'll cook, obviously. And, you know, if your pans are like stuffed underneath in a cabinet underneath a bunch of stuff or hung up really high or, you know, the more accessible everything is, the easier it'll be for you to just grab things and start cooking. So
mm-hmm.
it's definitely important to have an organized kitchen, no matter how small the kitchen might be.
Now, you're in Nebraska now?
I am, yeah, in Omaha.
And can I ask what brought you there?
Yes, my boyfriend.
Okay, what's it
pretty
like? I have
answer.
Never been to Nebraska, and being one of these, you know, snobby urban people that spends most of my time in New York and San Francisco and occasionally Chicago, I don't know much about Nebraska.
It's, I guess it has a small town feel, but it's not, I don't know, have you ever been to... And it's a pretty typical Midwestern city in that there's lots of cool like farmers markets, but then there's also, you know, things like strip malls and
it's America.
But, yeah, but there's a lot of cool things there too, and it's getting more and more vegan friendly, and just like the rest of the country is kind of developing into everything's a little bit. Urban, no matter where you are, like there's a downtown area there that's a bunch of warehouses that have been converted into lofts and shops and things like that, you know, and there's a Whole Foods, so it's not like
Whole Foods, so you can find everything.
Yeah, pretty much. I don't know if I'd be able to survive there without Whole Foods, which is kind of strange because I was very you know, more into shopping at local markets and
right.
things like that. And, you know, and if you live in places like New York or Portland, there's not really ever a reason to go to Whole Foods. But seriously, like in the middle of the country, Whole Foods is pretty revolutionary. So, you know, you can go and get basically anything you ever need. So I'm pretty set there.
What's the local cuisine like in Nebraska? I'm not sure.
I can't eat most of it, but
sure.
As far as the stuff that's, it's kind of interesting because I haven't ever lived in the middle of the country and I don't have much experience with the food, but I'm always, you know, willing to learn and love learning what people like to eat in different areas. And so Nebraska seems to be things I've never heard of, like runzas.
Mm-hmm.
Which is this, like, meat-stuffed bread pocket-type thing. And so I made vegan versions, and they're really awesome with seitan and sauerkraut. And then also people eat chili with cinnamon buns. That's, like,
oh.
a thing.
Okay.
So that was kind of fascinating.
Yeah.
But there's also a vegan restaurant called Daily Grub, and that's a lifesaver too. So I can go get my...
So there's a little
my,
community there.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I can go get a tofu banh mi or a tempeh lettuce and tomato. And then there's another vegetarian-friendly restaurant that has tempeh and tofu and vegan cheesecake and things like that. So, and then my boyfriend had started this group called Vegan Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
So we have meetups once a month, and the restaurants will do an all-vegan buffet or family-style thing for us. And that's been really fun because also they keep some of those vegan items on their menu even after the meetup. So this,
nice.
Yeah, next month we're having a vegan pizza party. And there's about, like, 30 to 40 people, maybe even more, that go to the meetups. And it's just, it's really fun to do it in a place like Omaha, which is
vegan-friendly.
Yeah,
they need you there.
What's that?
They need you there.
Yeah, and it's just more, people are really appreciative. Like, in places like Portland or New York, people are always complaining about the vegan stuff, which is cool, because I think we need higher standards.
Uh-huh.
But it's just fun to be someplace where it is really exciting to go and have a vegan pizza party and it's not taken for granted. So, and to have the chefs also get excited about cooking vegan for us. So the chef I spoke to do this pizza party, it's called Dante's, and he was just totally into it and like, oh, yeah, we'll do these, you know, family style. We'll do these roasted veggies and we'll do a vegan pesto and we'll get vegan cheese and, you
wow.
know, just to have people get excited about it. It's really
That's
fun.
That's nice. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I believe chefs, once they get over some sort of rigidity, really can get excited about vegan cuisine. It's it just opens a world where you're shifting focus to what the main event is on the plate. And there are just so many more vegetables and grains and things to work with, and they all have vibrant colors and fabulous flavors and textures. It just, it's a whole new paint box.
Yeah, it sure is.
Now, you didn't have any formal culinary training.
No.
And, you know, in some ways that's a good thing. And I think it's encouraging to other people who don't have training to know that they can go into the kitchen and make fabulous meals.
Yeah, I mean, I think I had training in that I cooked a lot and I worked in kitchens. So that was, you know, my training was pretty much life. So
mm-hmm.
I think sometimes if you go to school for it, it becomes kind of this precious thing like, oh, you'll know how to, you know, carve a potato into a diamond, but you know, it just, you end up being so influenced by whoever your teachers are and things like that. I mean, it's great if it can come naturally to you and you can, you know, innovate and kind of learn. That's how I learn anyway, just by more intuition, I guess.
Yeah.
And hands-on and things like that. Like, I dropped out of high school, so I don't really like being taught in a traditional way.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the artist in you, obviously.
And I went to an art high school, and I still dropped out.
Well, I don't want to talk about the goods and bads of our educational system, but it certainly is not there to support everyone. And you mentioned that French cuisine is something that you're not familiar with, which I thought was really interesting to read because whenever we talk about cooking, it's like French is the apex where we all want to go.
Well, interestingly, I went to France for the first time. Well, I went to Europe for the first time this past fall and actually did learn a lot. So now I can say I'm pretty familiar.
Yeah, I lived in the south of France for 4 years as a vegan, and you do learn a lot just by paying attention and seeing the foods that they do make and how they prepare them, how they place them on the plate.
Mm-hmm.
That was really inspirational to me. It gave me lots of wonderful ideas. And they do use a lot of fresh vegetables there.
Yeah. I stayed at this a vegan B&B called Gentle Gourmet.
Mm-hmm.
They were doing Paris Vegan Day.
Right.
So, yeah, I got a chance to see how things are done there and to visit a couple of the French vegan restaurants, which was exciting. And there's a there were other people from around France that had come to the Paris Vegan Day and had, you know, vegan establishments in other parts of France also, so that was pretty cool.
What kind of food did they serve in this vegan bed and breakfast?
They did all sorts. I mean, we were there for a special occasion, so it mm-hmm. was we had a Thanksgiving night and a Latin night. So, but I think, you know, lots of mushrooms and creamy things, and they have a lot of actual vegan creams that taste really yummy over there. I don't really think we do here.
Mm-hmm.
But when I came back, I was pretty much addicted to making things with cashew creams and nut creams and those kind of things, and making roux and, you know, using more French flavorings. So
yeah,
more
it's
wine.
Just one other place to go to make things more interesting and more varied.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really excited to hear what's going on there, because when I lived there, I never met another vegetarian. Nobody wanted to talk about vegetarian food. And then the funny thing happened where the Veggie Pride Parade was created in France, and all these vegetarians were coming out of the closet. It was hysterical.
Mm-hmm.
And now there seems to be more activity all around Europe, which is it's just very inspiring.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a quick little break, and Isa, if you can just stay with us, because I have a lot more things to talk about with you.
Sure.
Okay, we'll be right back.
To PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Have you heard? The Burt Cohen Show brings you the hidden truths behind the stories that affect us all and gives you the information you need to build freedom, community, and a much better world. This is Burt Cohen. My past shows include The New Media Power of Comcast, Socialism for Wall Street Only, and How to Empower Your Own Community Over Corporate Interests. For archives, go to ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com and listen to The Burt Cohen Show every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. The Burt Cohen Show. There's really nothing like it.
Peter Bregan, author of Talking Back to Prozac, Toxic Psychiatry, and Medication Madness. Listen to my newly syndicated talk show, The Dr. Peter Bregan Hour, and find out why they call me the conscience of psychiatry. Hear my cutting-edge guests expose the dangers of conventional psychiatric diagnosis, drugs, and shock treatment. Learn about better ways, better therapeutic and spiritual approaches to healing ourselves and to making the most of our lives in a responsible, loving, and creative manner. Make your life turn out the way you want. Join me every 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live or on the archive at ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com.
Houston, we have a problem.
Christiane Brown. In today's 24-hour news cycle, most people get about a minute of real truth. Not on the Solution Zone. Every week, I bring in America's best-known activists, bloggers, authors, and politicians to uncover the hidden issues that help separate the truth from the spin.
The Solution Zone with Christiane Brown, every Wednesday at 3 on Progressive Radio Network.
Everyone, this is Richard Martin, host of your bi-weekly wake-up call, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, coming to you live all the way from Singapore. I try to cut through the lies and misinformation to bring you what you need to know to prepare for the economic horrors that lie ahead. I'll give it to you straight in simple language. I don't sugarcoat the news. Unlike the government and media, I have no agenda other than to make you aware of ways in which you can protect yourselves and your loved ones. That's the Wake Up Call, Mondays and Fridays at 10 a.m. here on Progressive Radio Network.
You're listening to PRN, Progressive Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. And I am here with best-selling author Isa Chandra Moskowitz talking about her new cookbook, Appetite for Reduction. Isa, Lisa without an L. I love that. I'm gonna be saying that all day. You wrote this cookbook, it says in the introduction, because you were actually dealing with some food issues yourself and health-related issues. And I think it's an interesting thing, and I like to talk about it, that I'm all for plant-based diets, but there are healthy plant-based diets, and then, you know, we could be living on French fries and potato chips all day too, which is vegan but not really healthy. But I believe that this is the most powerful diet, and you can really focus it to make your meals healthy and also really health-supporting, especially in challenging health times. This is the winning diet if you know what to do with it.
Right. Well, yeah, I didn't get into veganism at all for health reasons. So, but I always still ate pretty healthy, even though I do definitely. I always liked baking cupcakes and making cookies and things like that, and pie. So, but you know, I always tried to have a pretty veggie-based diet, and I've always loved, well, not always, but since going vegan, really loved cooking vegetables and things like that. So. But even as healthy as you eat, you can still have health problems. So, you know, one of the issues that came up for me was that I had PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome. And I don't know if we want to talk about my ovaries too much, but, basically it was recommended to me that I start eating, a lower fat, whole grains based diet. So yeah, that's why I came up with most of these recipes. Was just for myself, and I thought, you know, if I'm doing this, other people probably want these kind of recipes too.
Absolutely. You know, the thing is, you've probably heard this a lot, when we talk about having a vegan diet, people say, oh, I love my meat, and we're all going to die, so I want to die this way. Which in some ways is kind of ridiculous because, well, I personally think that we should all be having the highest quality life we can have for as long as possible. Our body should feel good and be energetic. And we just know that an unhealthy meat-centered diet is a recipe for disaster health, heart attacks and diabetes and all that other stuff. But just because you're eating vegan doesn't mean, number one, it doesn't mean you're going to be immortal. You know, nobody leaves this world alive, and it's not a guarantee for ideal health. It is an opportunity to reduce risk significantly for all kinds of health issues. And no, we don't have to go into talking about your ovaries, but we don't have to go into talking about mine either. But I had been a vegan since 1988, and then some 20 years later, I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. And so, the vegan diet in itself does not prevent diseases, but I do believe that the diet that I was on at the time is what kept me alive all these years. And then I just upped it a notch. I knew what I needed to do to boost my own immune system, and now I eat a lot more carefully, and I'm here. And
I'm so sorry to hear about. I didn't know about that.
Oh yeah, it was my little romp with cancer a few years back. And it was certainly an eye-opener about a lot of things, but it just made me so much more of a believer behind plant foods. You know, I consumed dairy until I was 30 years old, and I know that that had a negative impact. But I will never know the ultimate cause, and I'm sure it was a contribution of many different factors. But what I do know is that healthy, colorful plant foods, especially dark green vegetables, I juice every day, it's my religion, is really what health is all about. And it's so easy for it to be yummy and easy and delicious. I always want to bring it back to the happy side of all of this. Because that's what life is supposed to be about, experiencing joy.
Yeah.
And we eat every day, and our food should definitely be joyful.
I agree.
But, I think people love to hear about individual stories. I don't know if it's something creepy about us, but a lot of people like to hear about other people's misfortunes and grief. But also, we love to hear how we got out of it, how we experienced something challenging, and then what we did to rise above it.
Yeah, I think, it's interesting having all of this news lately about, you know, vegan. If you're vegan, you won't get cancer, you won't get sick, or nothing, mm-hmm. you know, bad will happen to you. I don't know. I'm not sure. It, like I said, I didn't get into all of this for health reasons.
Yeah.
So I don't know. You know, in a way, it's almost putting too much pressure on people. Oh, but you're vegan. Why do you have a cold? Why do you have this, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
Like, I definitely think, you know, plants, there's lots of science out there that supports the idea that plant-based diets are a lot healthier. On the other hand, we all have to, you know that we aren't immune to anything. There's things like genetics that play a big part and other environmental things going on that can affect our health, so... I try and be as healthy as I can be and still get, you know, joy out of life and out of my food.
Yeah. What do you have a particular favorite in this book?
I have the book really is so many of my favorites.
What you love to
so
eat.
So it's hard to choose, but I find myself making the everyday chickpea quinoa salad in there is called that, like I say in the book, because I'd make it every day.
Mm-hmm.
I always have, like I was saying, I always have quinoa and greens and chickpeas in my fridge and some yummy dressing. So I really love the goddess dressing and the balsamic vinaigrette. So with the dressings I did, instead of using oil or cream or anything like that to get them thick and creamy and emulsified, I used cashews.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked that method and have been using it. I probably make a different kind of dressing every day. You know, I think there's like maybe 15 dressings in the book, but I have a hard time sticking to them. I'm always kind of, and I think once you start making dressings, you'll start kind of doing that too, just tweaking them all the time and making up new inventions.
Yeah.
And then lots of the stews I have pretty often. So the chilies, I think there's three different kinds of chilies. The lentil and eggplant chili I ate a lot during the winter. The pot pie stew I ate a lot during the winter, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now that spring's coming, I'm sure I'll be doing more of, like, the corn chowder and, I don't know, a lot more of the salads. And the salads aren't, like, here's some greens and a dressing. They're all pretty filling entree-type salads with beans and nuts and tofu and grains and greens. So I tried to make
them
filling.
I was reading this, going through every recipe, and, you know, basically just nodding my head because, yeah, this is the way I like to eat.
Yeah.
And it's just delicious. It's satisfying. I often say that it's clean.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it doesn't – I find it harder and harder to eat in a restaurant, actually. Because of all it's the food, it's just as isn't as fresh, or it's overly salted, and it doesn't have good natural flavors.
Yeah, I think it's good to cook and know exactly what's going into all your food.
Yeah, so you have some really simple things that are kind of, they have a comfort food feeling to them,
mm-hmm.
Like a cream of corn recipe. And actually, I haven't had that in so long that I think
the cream
I'm going to have
corn,
to try
yeah.
that one. Or just reminds me of my childhood. And then you have, you even have an onion ring recipe.
Yeah, that was actually for my boyfriend. And I never liked onion rings. And
mm-hmm.
I was just like, oh, we don't need, you know, it's not going to be good. People just want fried. But I did this, I came up with dipping them in, I think it's like cornstarch and some other stuff, and then dipping them into these breadcrumbs and then baking them. And they're amazing. I like them better than I liked fried onion rings. The onion, I use sweet onions like Walla Walla or Vidalia,
mm-hmm.
and they get really succulent and juicy, and you know, the outside is nice and crispy. It's just, they're lots of fun to eat.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to be doing that. I haven't tried it yet, but just an excellent idea. I do use the oven a lot for things that some time ago I used to fry things, and now I've moved to baking things.
Yeah, the falafel
things.
Also. Yeah, there's lots of stuff like that I was like, you know, these are traditionally fried. Let's see if we can get the same, you know, delicious flavor out of them not frying. Another recipe that was like that was one of the a West Indian black-eyed pea curry
mm-hmm.
with steamed plantains, and that for me is a really great comfort food.
Oh, so, I love plantains.
Yeah,
and
instead
beans.
Of frying them, they're steamed, and they're so yummy, and they get, it's just, I'm not going to say it's exactly like frying. It's actually a little bit better, because when you fry them, they get a little bit dried out, but steaming them, they stay nice and sweet and plump and firm, and they're great, you know, great little bursts of sweetness for on top of the spicy curry.
Well, there's definitely a transition when you're used to eating standard American food that's overwhelmed with fat and salt and sugar. But when you get past that and all of a sudden your tongue is working again,
yeah,
and you can taste things, I definitely prefer the food when it's baked, because there's just so many advantages. One is your kitchen stays cleaner.
Yeah.
Because frying tends to, that oil splatters, it gets all over the walls and does this really nice thin coating that gets thicker and thicker over everything
yeah,
over time.
Yeah, I pretty much only fry once a year, and that's Hanukkah, and I'll do latkes.
Potato pancakes.
Yeah, and that's it. Like, I never really loved frying anyway. It does make your kitchen pretty gnarly.
It makes the kitchen dirty, and it's time-consuming, especially if you're making something like potato pancakes or something where individual things that you need to flip and then add something else and wait for that. It's time-consuming. Baking, it's fast. You just put all those things on a tray.
Off. That's why I like it. You don't need to stand over the stove. If I eat fried foods, I'll eat them out at a restaurant. I don't take the cleanup so much. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. The book, for me, I'm not going to go on a tirade against unhealthy, you know,
mm-hmm.
I think anybody, as long as you're not eating fried food every day, like I know plenty of people that are perfectly healthy and at a healthy weight, quote unquote, you know, that eat fried food. So I think it's all up to, you know, our individual bodies, our individual metabolisms. Like, for instance, my boyfriend and I can eat the same thing for a week, and he'll lose 5 pounds, and I'll gain 5 pounds. So, you know, it's just kind of how it is. I also worry about, like, I didn't want to write a diet cookbook. Like,
mm-hmm.
you know, first of all, because I'm not a skinny person, and I don't want people to be like, why are you telling me to diet, you know, when you're fat? That would be stupid. But also just because I think we all have our own individual weights our bodies are comfortable at. I don't think that, you know, being quote unquote overweight is a death sentence, and I don't think it means, you know, you have to, things like yo-yo dieting and starving yourself are just as unhealthy, if not more, than, you know, having some extra poundage that you're carrying around. So I just kind of like, I'm trying to be happy at the weight I'm at, you know, and I think a lot of women are struggling with that kind of thing, and
Absolutely.
Also trying to eat healthy and not going to extremes and not beating myself up for stuff, because you know, another thing with the vegan diet fad is that you're, you know, there's this promise like, oh, once I eliminated meat and dairy from my diet, I lost this weight and da-da-da. And then it's like, okay, well, what if you don't? Like, mm-hmm. I'm vegan because, really I'm vegan because I care about animals. So I think setting stuff up like that, like, oh, when you go vegan, you'll lose weight, is kind of setting veganism up for, like, ex-vegans, because what if somebody goes vegan just for that and they don't lose the weight?
Yeah, so, well, I know that we're just looking for any angle that we can to get people over to the compassionate side.
Oh, I agree. I just think, I think still within reason. Like, I don't think, sometimes it goes too far. Like, for instance, the PETA ads, like, calling women fat women whales, or, you know, even there's like
you
a
got
lot
my
of
vote there. They definitely go too far, and
there's a lot of like anti, you know, fat.
I don't think we all need to go naked to get our message across.
Yeah, there's a lot of like so what I'm saying is, like, I think, you know, I don't think by any means necessary, because I think everything is kind of interconnected. So I don't think, oh, be sexist because people will go vegan, or mm-hmm. do something racist because that will make people vegan. So I think, like, with those things, like, we need to be realistic also, and be, you know, not sell it as this cure-all, because it's not. I don't know if that's making me, I think it's a great diet, you know, in terms of health. I just don't think it should be, that's how we're going to promote it and make all these promises, because it comes across almost like an Atkins type thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think,
well, yeah, many of us sound like we are religious fanatics.
Yeah, which, that could happen too.
Yeah.
I just, you know, like, I think it's good, you know, to be like, you know, I'm vegan because I care about animals, and here's these other added benefits.
Well, you know, I think we live, I know that we live in this Mad Men kind of world where we're all so influenced by marketing and advertising, so that we all, if we have something that we want people to know about and we want to get the message out, we take this advertising slant, we try and sell people on stuff, and we look mm-hmm. for the selling points, the talking points, in order
right.
to get their
attention.
Right, I think
that's cool, as long as it's honest and true, you know,
mm-hmm.
and from a good, positive place. So I don't think there's anything wrong with being great at advertising, as
yeah,
long as what you're selling is realistic, I guess.
And it is true. It's a double-edged sword. I'm really glad that there are more vegan products out in the market, but some of them, you're not going to get thin on them. There's the Oreo cookie version, Numinos, that are vegan, and there's
right.
all of the frozen
desserts.
And there's
the vegan candy bars, and I think
yeah.
that's great, but I don't think that's incompatible with what veganism is, you know. I think it's great to have as many vegan products out there as we can, as long as they're not, you know, I don't think it's great to eat, like, high fructose corn syrup and hydrogenated fats and things like that, but, you know, to have these vegan alternatives. And, I mean, I wrote cookie books, and I'm writing a pie book. Like, I think it's important to have
mm-hmm.
people be able to indulge and be vegan, because, again, it isn't all about it's not all about health.
So is that what's next? You're writing a pie book?
I actually am, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
That's the third book in our trilogy of dessert books.
Mm-hmm. Pies are really, really a wonderful thing.
Yeah, they're nice and homey and huggy.
Yeah.
It's been really fun to write.
And I just want to mention one thing I appreciate amongst many things in this book is you do make note of what items are soy-free or gluten-free, or
mm-hmm.
take 30 minutes so people can get a quick look and know what's appropriate for them,
yeah.
because so many of us have different food issues nowadays.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, the gluten-free thing, like, it's so easy to do gluten-free.
Mm-hmm.
So why
I
not just make
agree.
Everything mm-hmm. easily made gluten-free or naturally gluten-free? It's just one of those things that I think people don't, you know, also with vegan, you can hear it and think, oh, I have to do all this weird stuff. With gluten-free, it's the same thing, but you don't have to do a bunch of, you know, substitutions or weird ingredients. Lots of many gluten-free ingredients can be found in your supermarket.
Yeah, absolutely. I just recently discovered that wheat gives me headaches, and it was quite a process to really
be sure that that was what it was. So that's kind of a drag. I know that I can have it, but I might be in for a two-day headache when I do get it, have it. But
worth it.
I've been working on a lot of gluten-free baked goods, and it's kind of been a fun process. I just made some great vegan hamantaschen that were gluten-free.
Oh, good. That's fun. I really like there's not many baked things in Appetite for Reduction, so it was mostly just working with grains and veggies and stuff. So
yes,
that stuff
no,
was all
you,
super easy.
You have other books on those subjects.
Yeah.
Which is, it's good because, there are so many different kinds of cookbooks, and some of them go from soup to nuts, you know, have all different kinds of menu items, entrees and desserts and soups and whatever.
Right.
And there's something for everybody, and this particular one is mostly savory non-dessert items.
Yeah, it's meals.
Mm-hmm.
It was all about meals. I think for some reason, I think it's easy to find out what's to bake, and, you know, finding out what to eat for dinner every night of the week is a grueling task usually. So that's what that book was about.
So we just have a few minutes left, and I wanted to mention some of your earlier days when you were involved with the Post-Punk Kitchen, which is the ppk.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, that's still my site.
Right, and so you still use that site, and you have a blog and recipes, and mm-hmm. it's just a fun place to go and a forum with all different kinds of topics. That whole thing was really amazing, the way you did a number of different food shows in your tiny little apartment in Brooklyn, and you had quite a following from that.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. I actually was taking the advice. I was working in an office in a cubicle, and my boss was like, just do what you love and the rest will follow.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, you know, I'm just going to – that's really what I liked doing. And so we just did that, and it did follow. So that was very cool.
Yeah, it was just amazing. And I'm just wondering what were all the elements that made it so popular? Was it – you know, the right place at the right time where we really had a need for that?
I'm not sure
it was a lot of different things.
Like I said, it wasn't anything that we planned or mm-hmm. thought too much about, and I think that's part of the appeal.
It was genuine.
If you like it, you like it. Still to this day, I try not to think too much about exactly what the right thing to do that will be successful. Just, again, I'm always mm-hmm. going to just follow my heart and do what I like doing and see what happens with it.
So, back to matzo balls. Have you had a good vegan matzo ball?
I make some great vegan matzo balls. So, I do one with tofu, which I know lots of people won't eat at Passover. So, I started doing one with flax seeds, but then some people don't eat flax seeds either.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I don't care about what you can and cannot eat during Passover because I was raised Jewish, but the religion doesn't hold much
right.
for me. And it kind of seems... I mean, I don't know who makes up those rules, but
I know.
If you're Sephardic, you can eat rice, and if you're not, you can't. And
mm-hmm.
I'm not eating wheat anymore anyway, so.
Oh, well, so you can't have, I mean, I don't know if there's a gluten-free matzo ball.
Oh, there's wheat in both of them. Well, yeah, I might try them anyway.
Yeah, on my site, I think that's still up there. I just redid my site, and so some of the recipes aren't there. But the matzo balls there made with silken tofu are amazing and really light and fluffy and...
Yeah, I
awesome.
Definitely. If it's not a lot,
grandma.
I can have like a little teeny bit of wheat and things. So I definitely might try that because you know, that's one of the. I'm really into making foods and substituting things in order to make some of the things that I was fond of when I was younger. And the matzo ball is one that I never quite. I haven't worked on it too much, but the few that I had were not. That's satisfying, so I'll definitely check out yours.
I really like the one with the tofu, and especially I think if you're doing it only once a year,
mm-hmm.
do the homemade vegetable broth and use the fresh herbs, the dill and parsley and sauteing onions and making the vegetable broth really flavorful and golden and using lots of fresh ingredients. I think people think of Jewish cooking as kind of like this, you know, gefilte fish and matzo ball and kind of brown. But these things can be vibrant. You know, I like to do grated carrot and lots of fresh herbs and It's really yummy.
Well, that's a really interesting point, because I think the cuisine varies. When I spent some time in Israel, and I was so overwhelmed. I worked for an Israeli company for a brief time, and the food over there was so exciting because they grew a lot of it, and the vegetables were so fresh, vibrant, full of color, full of flavor. I was really quite...
We're all used to, like, the Jewish deli and, you know.
Yeah, all the white, gray, highly fat foods.
So, I mean, yeah, I definitely love a knish, but you can make a knish with, like, spinach and broccoli, too, and make it really colorful and fun.
That's right. You can have all of your favorites and keep them plant-based and cruelty-free and good for the environment and yummy and healthy and all of that good stuff. So we just have a minute or two left. So other than this new pie book, when can we expect that to come out? Do you know?
That's going to come out in fall, and that's written with my oft-writing partner, Terry.
Oh,
Terry
great.
Romero.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I get to see her from time to time because she's still in New York.
Yes, she is.
Anything else on the horizon for you?
That's it for now. I'm doing a bake sale on April 3rd for Japan, and there's a lot of other bake sales around the country, so I would look into your area and see if there is one.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much for giving me an hour of your time. I learned a little bit about Nebraska, and I should spin by there sometime.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank you for everything you've done. Please visit Isa's website, theppk.com, the Post-Punk Kitchen. Lots of good stuff there. Definitely check out this wonderful book, Appetite for Reduction. And thank you very much. I'm Karen Hartglass. You've been listening to It's All About Food. Have a delicious week.